Okay, welcome back to our second presentation on financial ratios, which are nowhere near as exciting as the dividend discount models. But hey, there's something that we should do to round out our research, numeric research, on the companies that we're looking at and give us a bit of a stew, or I like to say the background music with regard to what we're looking at. So, what would be a good idea, I forgot to mention this in our previous presentation, would be to have the I think I said something about it. Have the financial ratio formula sheet with you. So I'm going to quick run over to that. It's already queued up. Here it is, the financial ratio formula sheet. And indeed, it's pretty straightforward, folks. You take one number, you divide it by another number. So last presentation, we took a look at the common stock ratio, the market ratios, as they're sometimes called. And we found that we've already gone over most of these, and much of them are easily accessible. Just look them up. But we learn how to do them. And now today we're going to take a look at the profitability ratios, the liquidity ratios, activity ratios, and leverage ratios. And we're not going to calculate all of them because once you've done three or four, I get the picture, Piano. Find the two numbers and divide them. All right. But then the important thing is to then compare them against their competitors, the industry as a whole, the market as a whole. So it's a lengthy process when we're identifying the companies that we're interested in and then keeping track of those companies. So let's take a look at first the profitability ratios. And these often, maybe not all of them, but often they're easily accessible through the internet websites, Yahoo, Bloomberg, MarketWatch. And of course, we can do them ourselves. They measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, profits to assets, or profits to equity. And the one you often hear the most about is the net profit margin. Although in the earnings calls, you might have heard them talk about their gross margin or their operating margin. And then you'll often hear analysts talk about the return on assets, the return on equity. So profitability ratios allow us to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on their sales, on their total assets, and their invested capital. So the first one we'll take a look at is the net profit margin, probably the one that is looked at the most. And that is relating the net income to the total revenue. So you remember the top line number and the bottom line number. That's what we're interested in, the bottom line. And what did it take to get that bottom line? How much did we have to sell? The top line, total revenue, sometimes called annual sales. Yeah, or and the net income is sometimes net profit. So where do we find those? Well, on the formula sheet, it'll tell you they're on the income statement. But you probably figured that out because you probably figured out, well, of course, if it's about income, it's going to be on the income statement. So let's run over to the income statement. I've got it queued up here. And what were the total sales, the total revenue, the net sales, annual sales, the top line number? What was that? It was 155,900. Now you don't have to use all the zeros. I just used the first six numbers. So write that down. That's the total revenue. That goes at the bottom of that's the quotient. I mean, that's the denominator in the quotient. And then what was the top number? Was the bottom line, the net profit, the net income, 47,000 or 47 million. So Ford sold almost $156 billion worth of product, cars, trucks, and they made $47 million. Right. But if you looked at their previous year, you saw we talked about this in our previous presentation. They made $3.7 billion on about similar amount of sales, a little bit less, on $5 billion less of sales. So you can see that everything's slowing down for Ford and not the only ones. So if we go back to our presentation, and I've got my cheat sheet here, I do that calculation. I take the 47 million, which in this case is just 47. You don't put the three zeros afterwards. And you divide that by 155,900, 155,900 million, and you wind up with 0.03. Not 3%, but 0.03%. In other words, they're barely making any money this year. What do you think is going to happen in 2020? Right, they're probably going to lose in money. And the question is how much, how hard is the recession going to be? So the higher the number, the better, of course, but it varies greatly from industry to industry. And if you had just looked at it last year, you would have seen that their net profit margin was over 3%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but remember, it's billions of dollars. The car companies, folks, cars are a difficult business. Don't let anybody tell you differently. You know, they're a real tough business to be in. No new company in the last 80 years has succeeded, except for Tesla. Tesla is the only one so far. Many people think Tesla is going to go under, but they're the only one that has succeeded. And they're also the only one in the United States that hasn't gone through bankruptcy other than Ford. So it's a tough business. So we'd have to look at their competitors, right? See how the other ones are doing. And last year, Ford was in line with their competitors. And we haven't looked at GM. We haven't looked at Honda or Toyota. Would it make a bet that the other ones are hurting just as much? Okay, so makes sense? Okay. Now, go to our next one, and that's the gross margin. Now, the gross margin is essentially the same. But instead of using the net income, the bottom line, we use the gross profit. That's after we have accounted for how much it cost us to make the stuff we sold. And we still use the total revenue, the top line number. So again, the higher the better. Again, it varies greatly from industry to industry. So if we bounce back to the income statement here, we'll see that their gross profit was $19 billion. So you see they made a lot of money if you don't account for the fact that they had to, you know, do research and development, selling, general administration. So if we use 19,110 and we divide that into the top line number, so let's go back and we go back, we'll find that that's actually about 12%. If you do the calculation, take 19,110 divided by 155,900. And you get about 12.26% is what I got. Cool? Now, is that good? Is that bad? Well, again, we have to look at the industry. We've got to look at the competitors. And we'll decide whether or not it makes sense for this company to have a number that's in line with the others. Or if for some reason it's not the same. And then we have to decide what that means to us. So I know it sounds like I'm being very squishy, and the reality is it's this big jumble, and you have to sort of try to make sense of it and see that yeah, they're in line with their other companies, and but we believe this company's going to do better for this reason or whatever the reason. So it's a part of a stew. It's part of the background noise, the background music. You don't normally see the gross margin discussed on the websites, but the net profit margin, we saw the previous one, and the next one, the operating margin, you do often see on websites. They will often report this one, so you don't have to do this one. This is the rate of profit being earned from net income, adjusting for non-cash items. What does that mean? In other words, we've already taken out the cost of goods sold, and now we're taking out the, oops, wrong one. That was not supposed to happen. We're now taking out the operating expenses. So we're looking at the operating margin. And let's read together. Yep, you guessed it. The higher the better. Great, varies greatly from industry to industry. So when we're looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in industry, it is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. So people will say, is that a good number? And I'll say, I don't know. Look at their competitors. Look at the market. Look at the market as a whole. Look at the industry that they're in. And that will tell you whether it's good or bad, or maybe it's not even important in this case. It's not something that we're interested in. We're interested in something. Oh, we see something else over here. So in this case, we go to the operating income. So let's run back to the income statement. And that's, here's the net, there's the total revenue, net sales, annual sales. And then we take out the cost of goods sold, and we're left with the gross profit. But now we take this SG&A or SG&O, and remember, if you listen to the earnings calls, they just throw out these numbers, these acronyms, like everybody understands SG&A, you know, overhead, operating expenses. And so they were close to $19 billion. So Ford barely squeaked out an operating income after they paid for all the cost of goods sold and paid for all their overhead. They got $368 million of operating income on $156 billion of sales. So if we go back to the, I'm going to do it right here. It's, I've done my calculation. Well, let's go back to the PowerPoint slide. Okay, so that's operating income of 368. Don't put the zeros because remember, we're just doing millions. 368 million divided by 155,900, and the operating margin is certainly higher than the net profit margin, but at 0.24%, not 2.4%, but 0.24%. Now, for some reason, Yahoo shows 1.7%, and this is where you have to be careful, because a lot of times these free websites don't really have the most accurate information, and what they'll put next to it is TTM, trailing 12 months, and you wonder, wait a minute, the last information that Ford gave out was, you know, December 31st, 2019. So how could they be? I'm not sure how they're doing that. You just have to be careful. And I don't really trust Yahoo. I look at Value Line and look at the company's website for their information. But sometimes there's an anomaly, and that's one of them, because it's not 1.7%. That's for sure. It's about 0.24%. Cool. Okay, so those were the net profit margin, gross margin, operating margin. Now let's look at a couple of measures that are not looking at the total sales, but instead looking at the assets and the equity, the return on assets, the return on equity. The return on assets measures how profitable a company is relative to its total assets. So again, there's that bottom line number, net income. But this time we divided by the total assets it took the company to own to produce that income. Return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets it has available. Of course, the higher the better, very popular, but we have to look at our competitors. So now we remember the net income, that's 47. Remember that? 47 million, just put 47. Where do we find the total assets? You remember, we find that under the balance sheet. So let's go to the balance sheet, and there's the assets. Current assets means 1 year. Total assets, 258,550,000,000 worth of assets on the books. Now, if they actually tried to sell all those assets, right, they wouldn't get that much for them. So what do we got to do? We got to take that 47, just 47, don't put the three zeros after it, and divide it by 258,540. And what you get is a very, very small number, 0.02%, not 2%, but 0.02%. And that's indicative of what's going on. The recession may be coming, it may not be, but it sure looks like it is. And car companies, when a recession hits, just get hammered because people don't buy new cars. They hang on to their old car and are very happy to repair it. So we get return on assets of 0.02. Now, if you had come back a year ago, it would have been a more respectable number. But it's a pretty pitiful number. But we got to go look at their competitors and see what's going on with their competitors. And we'll probably find the same situation. Now, how about the next one? Return on equity, return on investment. This is similar to the one we just looked at, but instead of looking at the total assets, this just looks at how much of the company is owned by the shareholders. Because remember, there's a ton of debt out there. There's a whole lot of debt, the liabilities. So we take the net income and divide it not by the total assets, by the total stockholders' equity. Because return on equity uses stockholders' equity instead of total assets for the denominator, the return on equity is sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, the return on equity will be much larger than the return on assets. Why? Because you're using other people's money to make your money. And this is a statement you hear in the industry, especially with real estate, but also with huge companies that have huge capital expenditures, like car companies. Some investors think this is great, right? You're using other people's money to make your money. But others, your humble instructor being one of them, are worried about the possible negative consequences of too much debt. Because what we're going to see is Ford has a ton of debt. And they're able to pay that debt this year. What about next year? Well, they got a lot of money in the bank. Don't worry. They're going to be able to. This is why car companies, they make a ton of money when times are good. And then when times are rough, they know that they're going to have to dip into the cookie jar to make it through the recession. And that's what happened the last time. You know, GM, I kept saying GM's going to go bankrupt next recession. And the guy who was running, Roger Stone was his name, I forget. He kept saying, we don't want to hear all this talk about bankruptcy. That's why I went through bankruptcy. Chrysler went through bankruptcy. Ford did everything they could to avoid bankruptcy, and they did. So they got to give them some credit for that. So those are the profitability ratios. Now, are they difficult? No, folks. The trickiest part is finding the number on the balance sheet or the income statement. Now, the liquidity ratios. We'll spend some time on the three. Actually, there's only two. Right? This is the one outlier here. This net working capital isn't a ratio. It's actually a quantity. But the current ratio and the acid test ratio. What a great name, huh? Okay. Also called the quick ratio. These financial ratios are concerned with the firm's ability to meet their day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy their short-term obligations. In other words, can you make payroll? Can you pay the rent? Can you buy the material you need to build what you're building or whatever? And so the current ratio and the quick ratio or acid test ratio are measuring that. The net working capital, as we see, will measure something that's very similar. We're going to take a look at the balance sheet for these. So the current ratio, very popular ratio, is a good indicator of how stable a company is. Anything over one is normally considered acceptable. Why? Because if your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems. So obviously, the greater the number is, the better. So in other words, if you have the same amount of assets as the same current assets as the same amount of current liabilities, then the current ratio will be one. If this number is higher, it'll be greater than one. If this number is higher, it'll be less than one. But there are some times when we had companies like Microsoft back in 2003, and I guess Apple now and Google now, have just tons of cash lying around, just unbelievable amounts of cash. And the current ratio was just skyrocketing. And they're saying, we're still a growth company. We need that money to rewrite Word over again and not get it right this time either. Rewrite Windows and make it even worse. But so finally in 2003, we're no longer in our early growth stage. It's time to pay dividends. And they've been a very good dividend paying company. So you could use Microsoft as one of your companies that you want to do the dividend discount models for. So let's run over to the balance sheet. Where is it, Frank? Here it is. There's the balance sheet. And let's take a look at the current assets. $114 billion, $50 million of assets, right? And run down to the current liabilities, $68 billion, $130 million in current liabilities that have to be paid within the year. Accounts payable. Short-term, long-term debt becoming payable now this year. You know, it's long-term debt, but now it's payable. It's coming mature and other current liabilities. And we find that if you take the current assets, current assets divided by the current liabilities, you get, 1.162. Make sure you do it. Make sure you do it. Of course, you can look it up. And Yahoo says 1.16. Can Ford make its payments? Yeah, especially with how much cash did they have on hand? $17 billion of cash, $17 billion of short-term investments. Yeah, they can make their payments. They're not going bankrupt. Okay, so Ford is in pretty darn good shape. But How much cash do they really have? So we go back to the PowerPoint presentation, and we take a look at the net working capital. The net working capital is not a ratio. It's the current ratio in dollar terms. So instead of dividing here, we subtract. So we take the current assets minus the current liabilities. And so that tells you how much above in terms of dollars the current assets are over the current liabilities. So if the current ratio is greater than one, that means the number is going to be positive. If it's less than one, the number is going to be negative. It's not that popular, and it's not really a ratio, but you will often see it discussed when people are discussing the current ratio, and the current ratio might be small, 1.02. They're just above it, but we're talking about billions of dollars, so okay, no big deal. Make sense? So this one's the outlier. It's not really a ratio. Now, the next one sounds kind of cool, right? Acid test ratio, or the quick ratio. Well, it's basically the current ratio, but this time what you do is you remove the inventory. So let's read together. Unlike the current ratio, the acid test ratio excludes inventory. Well, why? Well, what happens if you're a computer company or another kind of company where you're inventory becomes obsolete or out of date? It might be difficult to sell or impossible to sell without discounting it. Now, cars, you know, sometimes you'll see, oh, we're getting rid of the old year's models, but they still sell them for, you know, they don't give them away, right? But if you have a computer that's a year old, does anybody want to buy it? So the acid test ratio, there's two ways of calculating it. I like the second way because it's a lot easier. But the first way is to take and add everything except for the inventory, and then divide by the current liabilities. The other way is a whole lot easier. Just take the current assets and subtract the inventory out. Either way, you're gonna get the same number. So if we go back to the balance sheet, here are the current assets here, right? Well, what are we not interested in? We just wanna subtract out the inventory. So they had almost $11 billion of inventory, but that stuff is, you know, going to be out the door pretty soon. People buy, well, who knows? Now, with a recession possibly coming, people are going to sit on their hands and say, oh, Bessie in the driveway, she's happy. She's still running fine. I'm not going to buy a new car because even though I like that new car smell, it's good for my liver and my kidneys and my brain cells, I want to keep my old car. So maybe now is a great time to do the quick ratio, the acid test ratio. So I did this already. What did I do? I subtracted out the inventory from the current assets. So that's 114,050 divided by 10,790. I'm sorry. So take 114,050 divided by 10,790, and you get 103,260. So that's the current assets without the inventory. Now you could add up this number, and that number. I just think it's harder to do, but you would decide. And then you divide that by the current total current liabilities, the total current liabilities of 98 billion, and you still get a number that's greater than one. It's a little smaller than the current ratio. You get 1.052. So even if all of a sudden, for some odd reason, nobody wants to buy a Ford car or truck anymore, which it's not going to happen, folks. But say that whole $11 billion almost of inventory became obsolete, Ford could still pay its debts. They're still not going into bankruptcy. Cool? Make sense? So these ratios, you will see them discussed, and you will hear people talk about them, and you should use them because they're important to make sure, hey, we don't want our company going through bankruptcy, right? The next group are the activity ratios. And these are sometimes called efficiency ratios, which I think is a little better name, the efficiency ratio. But basically what they're saying is, okay, how are you managing your assets, right? And turnover really means that. How many times do we turn over our accounts receivable? How many times do we turn over our inventory? How many times do we turn over our total assets? So we use information from the balance sheet and the income statement. So let's read together. My apologies if I'm going too quickly. Remember, you can always slow it down if you use the Wonder Professor or if you use YouTube. The activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into the cash or sales. Companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because this will generally lead to higher revenues. In other words, you want to be efficient. As efficient as makes sense. You don't want to be ridiculous, you know, sometimes. There's the great story of Elon Musk and Tesla, how he wanted to do everything with robots. He didn't want anybody working on the machines. And it turns out that the robots were not as efficient as the humans. So they said, well, we think we made a little mistake. So they sort of backed off on everything being done by a robot and had a people. And it turned out that was more efficient. So we do want to be efficient, but we want to be careful. So So let's take a look at the first one. The accounts receivable turnover. Now, what are accounts receivable? You accountants know that they're basically, that's money that is owed to us. Business to business, often we don't pay in cash. We send the product out, and then our customers then pay us after 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You accountants, you know this. And rest of us, it's not that difficult. Basically, they owe us money, right? And so this is a measure of how well we're managing our accounts receivable. In other words, are we getting paid what we're owed? So we take the total revenue, the top line number, and we divide it by our accounts receivable. Now let's read together, because this is a little tricky, depends on the industry. The higher the number, the better. It indicates the return a company is getting from its investments in accounts receivable. Huh? What, you're investing in accounts? Yes. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. Why? Because you want people to buy your stuff. So you say, okay, I'll send you the stuff that you want to buy, but you don't have to pay me for 30 days or 60 days. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis, for example, Starbucks, right? you don't send them the coffee and then they pay you 6 months later. Or its extension of credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its credit policies in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit, not earning interest for the firm. In other words, we don't want deadbeats out there. We don't want people, we send them the product and they pay us 6 months or a year later. But that's just how some industries operate. Now, I used to be involved in the defense industry a long, long time ago, and it was just a bit of a joke how long it took Uncle Sam to pay his bills. Don't worry, Uncle Sam will pay for that aircraft carrier, okay? He will come up with the $13 billion, whatever it costs, but it just takes forever. And there were a lot of the smaller vendors, this is a long time ago, folks, I won't tell you when, but the Congress people were trying to get the Defense Department to say, look, we want you to use small businesses too. Don't use the giants. And so the Defense Department said, okay, you know, so they said, come on, small business, we want to do business with you. But then these small companies, they weren't used to not getting paid quickly. You know, the big companies, they know the drill. They know, okay, they're going to pay us in a year or so, so we'll front them $1 billion for a bunch of aircraft, but we know we're going to get paid, but we can do it. But the small companies said, no, you don't understand. I got to make payroll. You can't do this to me. So my understanding is that Uncle Sam did increase the efficiency with how they paid their vendors. That's my understanding, but that was a long time ago and I haven't been involved since. And some of the veterans in our classes have said, yeah, we pay a lot faster now. Yeah, don't worry about that. So that's been a few years also. Okay, so let's take a look at Ford's accounts receivable turnover. So we know the total revenue. Do you remember that number? That was $156 billion, about $155,900 billion. Where do we get the accounts receivable? That's on the balance sheet. And I have $63,140,000. So if we take total revenue, $155.90 billion divided by 63,140, we get 2.469. So what's that saying? That's saying that Ford is turning over their accounts receivable about every, 5 months or so. No, more than that. About every 4 months or so. 2.5 times a year. Divide that into 12. Yeah, about every 4 or 5 months. Not particularly efficient, but not bad. So in other words, Ford sends the trucks and the cars to the dealerships, and the dealerships take about 3, 4, 5 months to pay them for the cars. Ford can handle that. Whereas other companies say, no, come on, pay us in 30 days, will you please? We're not that big. Okay, the next one is the same idea, but it's inventory turnover. We take the total revenue and we divide it by the inventory. The higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from the funds tied up in inventory. As with all the ratios, we must compare them against the industry averages on our competitors. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory. We don't want excess inventory, right? A high ratio implies either strong sales or ineffective inventory buying and maintenance. We don't want that either. High inventory levels are unhealthy because they represent an investment with a rate of return of zero. When you go to a car lot, you want to see as many cars as possible. But the dealer doesn't want, yes, the dealer needs to have a lot of cars out there so people can pick and choose, but they want as few cars as possible because it's money just sitting there not doing anything. And that's the inventory dilemma, right? You got to have inventory to sell stuff to people, but you don't want a whole lot of inventory because what happens if that inventory becomes obsolete, right? All of a sudden you can't sell it or there's falling prices. So you really would like to turn over your inventory as quickly as possible. And that's strong sales, but there's a trade-off involved. So if we take our total revenue, that's that same $155 billion, $900 million, and divide it by the inventory, which remember what that was? It was a little less than $11 billion, $10 billion, $790. You get an inventory turnover about 14.5. That means Ford is turning over their inventory more than once a month. So every three or four weeks, which is great, right? That's fabulous. That means they only got about 3 or 4 weeks of inventory lying around the house. They don't want it there. They want it out the door and selling. And that's actually a pretty darn good number for Ford. Okay, so the next one. Next one is total asset turnover. Now, so what this is doing is taking a look at that same top line number, that total revenue, but this time we're dividing it by the total assets. So we're measuring the firm's efficiency at using the assets to support sales and revenue. The higher the number, the better, right? Because we're using our assets efficiently. Companies with low profit margins tend to have a high asset turnover. Those with high profit margins have a low asset turnover. So what does that mean? If you're a grocery store, you have huge turnover, right? So you have these tiny little profit margins, but so don't feel bad. They sell everybody a gallon of milk every 2 or 3 days, right? So they make a few pennies off that gallon of milk, but they do it, 100 times a year. Whereas if you have high profit margins, you don't sell that many jet fighters. So you have low asset turnover, but you have a high profit margin because that's how you survive. So in this case, we take the $155,900 that's been our total revenue, divide that by the total assets. Where do we find that? On the balance sheet. And if you remember, you can look, stop the presentation, go find it. It's $258,540. So we take that total revenue divided by the total assets and we get a number about 0.6 or so. We need to take a look at our competitors, at the industry as a whole, because it doesn't really sound that great, does it? Well, that might be the way it is in the car industry, because the car industry is tough. Okay, so those were the turnover ratio, the activity ratios. I'm sorry, the efficiency ratios. Now we're ready. Come on, sweetheart. Up. We're ready for the leverage ratios, sometimes called solvency ratios. And these were very important to Mr. Benjamin Graham. When you read, not if, when you read The Intelligent Investor, and don't read it first, remember I warned you, read One Up on Wall Street, read A Random Walk Down Wall Street, read a few other books, but eventually you're going to want to read The Intelligent Investor. He was very keen on these things. He loved these leverage ratios, and he'll really show you how he was a little master at taking the background music and keying in on the songs that were the most important, right? These are the tunes that are the most important that we want to, or whatever analogy you want to use. The stew, what was the spice that was the most important spice? So he would use these leverage ratios really, really well. So I don't pretend to be as good as Mr. Benjamin Graham was. So these financial ratios, they are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. You'll hear people say, oh my goodness, they have so much debt. Well, sure, if they can service that debt, they don't have to worry. But, you know, along comes a recession, so you better be ready. Right, exactly. So some of you might see this and remember from Business 121, the debt to equity ratio. Do you remember that? Well, it's the same idea. Instead of an individual, we take a look at how much debt, how much equity, and we look at that ratio. But here is the one that Mr. Benjamin Graham really liked, and that was the times interest earned. In other words, how many times are you earning the interest that you have to pay, or you can hauled off the bankruptcy court? And then total debt to total assets, a similar ratio that we learned in Business 121. So we use information from the balance sheet or the income statement. Debt is often referred to as leverage, and we'll come back to this term leverage. You hear it a lot, especially in the real estate world, but also in the financial world, investment world. The idea, what's the idea? The idea is that you're using other people's money to make your money. You are using the borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. When one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. So one firm is saying, look, we want to buy this other firm, but we don't have enough cash, so we're going to borrow a ton of debt and use it to buy the other firm. Now, is this a smart thing to do? Well, you know, a lot of us, your humble instructor all included, are worried about debt because debt can drown you. But other people say, no. You want to have as much debt as possible. I'll never forget. At a party with a group of other people who like to ride bikes, I was with some folks who were, you know, very, very wealthy, and they knew I taught this stuff. And I said how we do our best to teach people to make love, not loans. This is Business 121 stuff, folks, financial planning and money management, and that you want to pay down your mortgage as you go through your working career so that when you're in retirement, you don't have a mortgage. It's a great feeling. And they said, you're nuts, Piano. You don't know what you're talking about. You want to die with the biggest mortgage possible. And I thought, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but the problem is, do you know when you're going to die? That's the problem. If you knew when you were going to die, sure, load up on debt and go, I'm dead. You can't come after me. But it's. I don't think it's a good, personally, everyone's different, right? I like to pay down debt. Anyway, so let's now take it back and take a look at big companies with lots of zeros after their numbers instead of us little people. And so let's take a look at the debt to equity ratio. This is a measure of a company's financial leverage calculated by dividing long-term debt by shareholders' equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. So you take the long-term debt and you divide it by the total stockholders' equity. Okay, so you don't worry about the short-term debt. That's being taken care of by the current ratio, by your current assets. So a higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means that a company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This will result in lower earnings because the interest is an additional expense that lowers your earnings. Sometimes investors only use interest-bearing long-term debt instead of total liabilities. The lower, the better. So, my apologies, I messed up on that. So let's take a look at Ford's long-term debt divided by total stockholder equity. So where do we find the long-term debt? You know where. On the balance sheet. There it is. 102,410. Ford owes $102 billion in long-term debt. And they have other liabilities too, but those are the bonds that are outstanding, right? $102 billion. And so what were the total stockholders' equity? That was, where was that? $33,320,000,000. So you look at the, go back to the PowerPoint. You take that long-term debt, $102 billion, divided by 33,320, and you wind up with about 300%, three times much debt as total stockholders' equity. Now, this scares the living daylights out of me, right? This means you owe a whole lot more than if you were to, you know, sell off all your worldly possessions. But in the world of car companies, this is typical. You look at what GM, look at the other companies, and they have just tremendous amounts of debt. So they just gotta go pish. This is what we do. This is welcome to our world. So go to slide 36, and you'll see times interest earned. Now this is the one I told you about. Mr. Graham was really keen on. This measures the ability of a company to meet its fixed interest payments. In other words, how many times throughout the year do I earn my interest? We take the earnings before interest and taxes, and we divide it by our interest expense. Now, this is the one that Mr. Graham was really keen on. Times interest earned is used to determine how frequently interest payments are earned by the company during a year. The higher, the better. Three or four is considered adequate. In other words, every 3 or 4 months, you've earned enough money to pay off all your debt payments. Not pay off your debt, just service your debt. Well, that was typical for Ford the last several years. It was sometimes upwards of six. But now, yeah, because their earnings have just fallen off a cliff and are probably going to go negative this year, what you find is the times interest earned is only 0.3. So they've only been able to earn their interest with 3 years of current income, but they're not, you know, the income's not going to change. It's not as though they've earned their income every 3 months or 4 months. It's only 36% has paid for the interest payments. So obviously, what are we looking at? Right, we're looking at unless things change immensely in the next several months, and they could change for a whole lot worse than better. Ford is going to have to dip into the cookie jar to pay off their debt. But that's why they got a big cookie jar. They know this. They've lived with this for decades. So Mr. Benjamin Graham would not be happy about Ford's dilemma. And I don't know if you've noticed, Ford's stock has just fallen off a cliff, but welcome to the club. It was what, you know, 10 or 12 or 8 or 9 just a few months ago, a month ago. Now it's $4.50 or something like that. Look it up. It's, of course, by the time you hear this, it's, who knows where it'll be. So yeah, so people are worried. Is Ford going to go through bankruptcy? Well, you look at I don't think they're going to go through bankruptcy. They're not as badly a lot of it depends on how many people just stop. If car sales do what they did in 2008 and 2009, where they literally just decimated, they just didn't sell. I don't want to think about it. I don't think it's going to. Well, we'll find out. Okay, so last one, dear students. And that's the total debt to total assets. And this should look familiar for you Business 121 fans, because this is what we do on the individual basis. We take the total debt, total liabilities, and we divide it by the total assets. Total debt to total assets includes both short-term and long-term debt and assets. If it varies substantially from the debt-to-equity ratio, the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt. Do you think it's a good idea to rely on short-term debt for your company? That's like that's like using credit cards to, and some people do, you know, some people have these, this idea, they're going to have this company and they use their credit cards to finance the company. And it's a very scary situation. And what did we say that? This is actually not too bad, actually. The total debt, the total liabilities were 225, 310, total assets, 258. So the total debt, total assets is 87% with 0.87, which again, for a company like Ford, that's typical. And so we're not too worried about that. They should be able to pay their debts for a few years, and hopefully we'll be through the recession. If there is a recession, we'll be through it long before that. Cool? So, are you proud of yourselves? I think you should be. These financial statements, financial ratios are fairly straightforward to do. They create this stew of information from which we can glean certain pieces of information, you know, pull out certain pieces of information, compare our potential and our current investments with their competitors and the market as a whole. So we are done with our fundamental analysis. What we've done in chapters 5, 6, and this chapter 17 is go through the measurements that I think are very important, and of course there are many others, and taking a look at companies from inside out, upside down, future dividends, future earnings, what's going on with the company, how much debt, how much equity, how many times can they pay their interest payments, how are they doing with their inventory and the like, accounts receivable, can they make their current payments, can they make their short-term payments, because now we're ready for some silliness. Because remember, it's the world of stocks, and there's a lot of silliness involved and a lot of money devoted to this silliness. So in the next two chapters, we'll be taking a look at some alternative ways to think about analysis. And so we'll start with stock market behavior, stock price behavior, market efficiency, and then we'll turn our attention to behaviors of investors, psychology, and what is often called technical analysis. Cool? So study hard, bring honor and glory to Southwestern College. Once you start doing the assignment, you'll say, okay, I can do this. Remember, we want at least two or three from each individual category. Don't just do the common stock ratios, the market ratios. Make sure you do some profitability, efficiency, liquidity, and what was the other one? The turnover, the four different categories. Okay, so be awesome, dear students. You know who to contact if you have questions. Thank you so much. It is an incredible privilege and an honor to be teaching this class, and we wish you the best of success.